everybody, and this is BitNote's 100th episode. Yep, that's right. BitNote, who's been playing great video game music for all this time, is now hit its 100th episode. And to celebrate, we have an hour-long special with some great video game music tracks. I hope you listen, enjoy yourself, have a good time, and listen to some great tracks. Enjoy! So yes, it's true. BitNote, the video game music show where I play video game music and talk about the games they're from, has hit its 100th episode, and boy, it's been awesome. I have played some great tracks. We've had some good times. Sometimes I've stuck mainly with playing video game music. Other times I've done Let's Play with text adventures, or devoted a few odd episodes to like a special topic or something. Speaking of which, there'll be more coming up in the future, but I digress. The point is, it's been great doing this show. It's been great having a lot of fun tracks, and while I don't always hear from everyone out there on what they think or how it affects them, and, you know, I often have to guess, I just know that there's a lot of great music that I've played on this show from a lot of great, talented, and brilliant people, and I know it's being listened to, and I know that people are hearing tracks that they wouldn't always have heard in the first place, and that's great, because we live in a world where sometimes it seems things get repeated a lot. It seems that there's almost a division between either hyper-successful or complete obscurity with nothing in between. And that insults me as a human being, because as human beings, we have expressions. Every single one of us has something to express or something to get across or something of worth. And the truth is, maybe when it comes to music, you probably need a bit of practice and a bit of expertise before you get something to good enough quality. But there are so many really talented and brilliant musicians out there, so many great music tracks, and indeed not just the music, the people who make the games themselves, who've devoted themselves to create something, but something that many people don't know about. So I like to think that on this show, I try to bring attention to them, bring attention to some of the great musicians, some of the great games, and have these great creative works that otherwise might have gotten, well, never quite overlooked, but at least maybe have its own people look after it. Just bring them to a slightly wider audience and spread the word about them, and hopefully spread it on. Because in the end, while there's always going to be huge marketing budgets and advertising to promote the next big thing, in the end, it's what we like and what we tell our friends and those around us that we like, and that spreads and determines what our culture is. So, on that note, I am going to move on to a track that I've honestly played music from this game before, at least twice. But I mean, I was on the internet and someone said, why doesn't this track get more recognition? I just love it so much. And you know, I loved it too. I think it's a great track. So, have a listen. This is At Dawn from Sonic Adventure. Well, that was great. That was At Dawn by Jun Senri from Sonic Adventure by Sonic Team. You can see why I like that track, and it's very well positioned in the game itself. In Sonic Adventure, I love that game. I played it a lot, and I mean, it wasn't a perfect game. In fact, I think I remember writing a great big post on the internet about all the little problems and niggly things I had with the game. But I wrote that post because I cared, because it struck something in me that I really, really liked, and maybe it just frustrated me that it wasn't just further along that area. But it was a great game. It was like a release game for the Sega Dreamcast, and it was the first time that Sonic the Hedgehog, this exciting character who had been in cartoons and had been like in all these two-dimensional side-scrolling platforms, was finally in the third dimension, so he'd be actually in fully 3D environments, and it was so cool and so exciting, and that's one of the reasons I loved him. At Dawn is a great track. It plays in the level Speed Highway, and it's actually got, there's a bit more of a story to it than that. You see, in the actual game, you go up to the skyscraper chasing Eggman, and you go to Speed Highway, and it's like this nightscape, this sort of like city things with great big city skyscrapers in the blue shade of night, and you're just racing around all these like suspended highways, racing along over nothing as you jump and bounce and everything, and it's all like going from rooftop to rooftop, and then you've got these weird Badnik robots that look like police things going after you and everything, and at one stage you catch onto the railing of a helicopter and go from one thing to another, and then you grab onto a rocket and go shooting across from one skyscraper to the next. So it's a beautiful, brilliant, you know, fun, surrealist thing. And then what happens is that you end up in this kind of like lobby top floor of this skyscraper, and it's got one of this like observation decks. I actually went years later, I went to Chicago, and I got to the Sears building, and I went into one of these observation decks. It's basically a glass cage that juts out from the side of the building. So you walk from the floor into this glass thing and look straight down through the glass floor all the way at the building below. Now, it wasn't actually as disorientating as I thought it would be. I think I got a bit of a strong stomach. But, I mean, when I was there just looking straight down at the pavement far below, I did think of Sonic Adventure. And one thing that didn't happen to me there, that did happen in Sonic Adventure, is that when Sonic is standing on the glass of the observation deck, the glass shatters. And he falls straight down the side of the building. So this is, like, really crazy. You see Sonic fall down, and then suddenly he seems to gravitate. And then he goes, hits the side of the building, and then he runs down the side of the building full force. And you get the camera angle, you see a great big face of him, his face, as he like races down the side of the building. And then you cut to, and then you start controlling him. You can suddenly race him down as you go left, right, avoid all the obstacles and pipes and banners that fly up. And most of the time you'll fail and get hit or something. But you'll just go race down at full speed. And boy, that was, if anything, that was a trailer moment. If they're just trying to push the whole thing of extreme and fun and the great thing of the Dreamcast. But there you had it, Sonic racing down the side of the building, running all the way down, before finally he smashes through several plates of glass ceiling and ends up in this lobby. So he manages to get through okay. Sonic has a weirdly inconsistent tolerance when it comes to falling from high things, but the fact he managed to get his feet on it and like was able to direct his direction back and forth, it probably helped. But then he goes out through the lobby into the street at proper, and then it's dawn. Up to then it's been night, it's been stars, it's been, you know, neon and searchlights. But now it's suddenly dawn. You can see the dawn breaking, the beautiful sky. The track plays, and you're suddenly walking around almost at street level as the cars fly by, as you go across, as you walk around the streets, the great skyscrapers tying overhead. If you want, you can hit a speed booster and start running along the side of the building for a bit of fun and jump around. And finally, it's a fairly short stage, but finally you get to the end and hit the capsule. And it's just a great capper to the thing. I mean, it's almost... and some, it's almost like a small little addition. Well, not that small, but it is kind of small, and it's got a waterfall, but it's just a nice touch. It's a nice atmosphere. Unfortunately, when Speed Highway was adapted to Sonic Generations, which was kind of like a remix of all the previous levels, they didn't include the whole At Dawn segment or even like a music change, which is a pity, because I would have really liked to hear that song again. But some great tunes and some great things. The level music from all of the music for all the levels in Sonic Adventure is just great. They really, really matches it up. It really coordinates it very well, and it really is just very atmospheric. I'm going to play you, actually, as I said, you walk around street level, but there's actually an adventure stage. Sorry, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. Maybe I should take it back. With Sonic the Adventure, sure, they had a bunch of different levels, and you played through the levels, you got from beginning to end, you raced through it, or sometimes you had a different objective, and it was great. But one thing they had was these things that are actually called hubs, which is essentially, or they call them adventure fields, which is basically this whole 3D area where you can run around, maybe talk to people, and in order to actually play the levels, you have to go to a specific part of the adventure field and jump through it. For instance, at the start, you find you're at the start of the game as Sonic, you find yourself at the stroll down on a deck chair by a swimming pool in front of a hotel, and run down to the beach, and then the Emerald Coast level starts, and then you head back, and then you realize you have to go to Mystic Cave, so you go to the train, and then that takes you to Mystic Cave, and then you have a boss fight, and then you go to another area of Mystic Caves, and then the next level starts. So I really liked it. It gave a great sense of atmosphere to it. Before I talk a bit more, I think I'll play one of Emerald Coast. This is the first level of the game, and as I said, the music that with the background of the game really, really works. So I think this is a great track, and it's definitely very symbolic of the thing itself. Have a listen.
We'll be right back.
And that was the track you hear as you run across a great big beach with oceans and rock formations that suddenly seem to form themselves and loop the loops, and being chased by killer whales, and just a great as the sun beams in the sky above you, and an azure sky. That track was Emerald Coast. Actually, it's called Azure Blue World. It is by Jun Sui, and of course from Sonic Adventure by Sonic Team. I was thinking about it, but I think Sonic Adventure has a special place in my heart because it wasn't just about the technology, it's not about the techniques. It's about the characters, the fun times, and the brilliant environments and areas. Sonic Adventure took place in a diverse amount of places. There was like volcanoes, there was like ice caps with avalanches, there was all these sci-fi, you know, like flying battleship areas with sky decks and stuff, and of course there was beaches, there was the high of skyscrapers, and then there were also mystic ruins as well, literally mystic ruins with jungles and ancient ruins, and there was also suddenly you're in a desert and doing some sandboarding as well. So I loved it that it just took so much different locations, and a combination between the music, the vibrant colors and great art, it just felt that each place is a place you almost wanted to be a part of or walk around in and see for yourself. And of course there was also the characters themselves. There were 6 playable characters, and looking back I realized, you know, there were cheesy aspects, the voice acting and such, but each character had its own mission, their own goal. There was something they were trying to get out of it. Every time that there was a conversation with another character, it would be meaningful. It might be on the surface kind of simple, but there'd always be a little something to it. And also had a fair bit of humor as well, and a bit of fun stuff like that. So that was a great thing I liked about it. It was just, you got caught up with the characters, and there was this whole world, and sure, of course, they were saving the world, but what was interesting was the path each person took. There was Amy's path with trying to reunite Bird with her lost family. There was E101's story, where he's basically a robot, and I guess he's told to follow all these orders, so he does, but as he does, questions start raising in his mind, and thoughts that he can't even begin to articulate crops up, and he suddenly brings him on a new mission before he finally ends up realizing who he is when part of himself goes away. Sonic's a pretty traditional story. He's Sonic the Hedgehog, he's got some tough times, but he's fighting Robotnik, and that's the main thing. He's trying to get his happy ending by going through the levels and doing everything. You had Tails, of course, he was one of my favorites. He was optimistic, he's the guy who's always the best friend of Sonic and always looking up to him. But at times, you know, he's with him for a lot of the earlier part of the game, but they get separated, and Tails has to find his own way. He can still be, of course, friends with Sonic, but find his own way. That's what his own music theme is about, and about independence, just trying to show that even without Sonic, that he's a good person. And then you had Knuckles, who's trying to... I wasn't quite as keen on Knuckles' story, but he's still just trying to respect the memories of his ancestors and return the floating island and make sure that people don't get their hands on the Chaos Emerald, job which he is the only person entrusted with, yet singularly seems unable to perform. I'm gonna leave off by talking about Sonic Adventure with Station Square. This is the music of the Adventure Field. It's kind of, Station Square is like a New York sort of area. It's got, you know, skyscrapers and streets, and I just loved running around that area. I loved jumping on the cars and suddenly seeing how they carried me about. That was the first time I'd done that in a video game, and I thought, this is really, really cool. And I loved going to the edge of the sea as the night falls and, like, looking at the stars. Because it was beautiful. Just the way I'd look up, the way I'd look around and just see the great big night sky above me by the edge of that little sea as the cars went by in the background with their headlights beaming through the light. I just loved that. I'll leave you with Station Square, and we'll move on to the next game then. We'll be right back. music like that, no wonder I loved Sonic Adventure. That was Station Square by Masaru Setsumaru and Jen Sui, of course, from Sonic Adventure by Sonic Team. And that was specifically Welcome to Station Square. Alright, so I think that there's a lot of great Sonic music. I think I've talked about it before, but I was actually found more Sonic music from a kind of unexpected source. You see, in the early noughties, Sega released the Sonic Mega Collection, and later the Sonic Mega Collection Plus, which was essentially a game released for of the time modern consoles that contained all the classic Sonic games, like Sonic 1, Sonic 2, Sonic 3, Sonic 3 and Knuckles, Sonic and Knuckles, and a bunch and a handful of other Sega games. And this was great. I mean, this was like a full way for a lot of newcomers or people who weren't familiar with the classic Sonic games to sit down and get to play these great classic Sonic games. Part of it came from the fact that Sega were kind of like getting very friendly with the GameCube and Nintendo back then, because of course Sonic Adventure 2 there was developed also for this GameCube, which was sort of a Nintendo cooperation thing. So I guess they're releasing the Sega Mega Collection to go, hey Nintendo fans, look, Sonic has a great heritage, you know, take a look at it. And indeed, of course, Sega would often release discs containing a lot of classic games on them, and I mean, they're not the only ones. I remember there was the There was the classic one where I played New Zealand Story and Bubble Bobble by the game company is slipping my mind right now. Anyway, the point is there was a lot of classic games on this thing, and I realized that when I was actually having a quick go at listening to it the other day, it actually contains some pretty good music. And the reason it contains music is because they didn't, you know, go cheap on the music. They actually also the person who did the music for this collection, you know, it wasn't even like a game in and of itself, it was a collection, was a guy who'd done a lot of music from before. His name was Hideaki Kobayashi, and he was, of course, did a lot of music for various different Sega stuff. And when I listened to it, I thought, hey, I gotta play some of this music on the air. So what I'm gonna play for you now is the intro theme. This music plays when, essentially, if you start the game, and this whole like sequence flows by a montage of all the different Sonic games and all the different Sonic moments, and they're here, this tune plays in the background, so have a listen. Well, that was great music and for a good collection as well. The collection had a lot of little touches like this. It had some classic concept art, not just from the games, but also some concept art from The Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog, the cartoon series. It also contained a ton of scans from the American Sonic comic, but not from the British Sonic comic, which kind of rubbed me the wrong way, but I figured, look, you know, they're making the effort, and, you know, sure that the UK's Egmont Fleetway Sonic comic was pretty awesome and should definitely get more respect, but how well. But essentially, it was a very nice collection. It had a lot of things, and it had a great variety of games, of course, the Sonic games, and also a couple of extra Sega ones as well. And there was one Sega game that it also had that I really liked, and that was Comic Zone. Now, to be honest, some of them were unlockable were a little hard to unlock. It's like play games multiple times and then just quit play, and that would actually unlock the game for you, which is sounding a bit cheap. But for me, on my Xbox, the reason that it unlocked immediately and I had access to Comic Zone immediately was because I actually had a Sonic Hero save on the Xbox. That's pretty cool. It actually happens a couple of times in games. You know, it's able to detect what other save games you have, and sometimes it does a funny thing around. Every gamer often remembers with Psycho Mantis in the original Metal Gear Solid. He was like this bad guy, but he was also had, you know, he was psychic, so he could like read minds, and so he'd try to read your mind before a boss fight, and this was a serious thing, and he'd suddenly say, oh, you like playing, you know, like Superman, you know, and he mentioned all these games that the player would have played, and it's like, whoa, he really is psychic. But a lot of fun in that regard. But Sonic Mega Collection, pretty good, even if it did only deal with them mainly with the Mega Drive Sonics. But there was actually another collection later on, the Sonic Gems Collection. They dealt with some of the games that weren't on the Mega Drive, such as Sonic the Fighters and also Sonic CD. So that was pretty cool in that respect. But in terms of Comic Zone, as I've played on the show before, I've mentioned how it was essentially released kind of late into the Mega Drive's lifespan. It was 1995. It was also kind of hard. It was basically about a comic strip artist who sucked into his own comic and has to fight through the enemies that are being drawn by the great antagonist who he's actually drawn, and basically make it through, defeat the mutant, you know, evil plot that's in the comics, but also try to defeat the antagonist and return back to reality so that he's not just going to be at the mercies of his own creations. So, you know, it's a fun thing. It was very creative in how it dealt with it. You start at the top left corner of the page, and each panel is like a little arena, and you like jump from between the borders of the panels to get to the next one, and you make it all down. It's got a very nice 90s comic book theme to it and everything. But one thing that I discovered when I was just doing some extra research, and, you know, I played through it a bit more and having a bit of fun, was that actually the music of the game, while great, of course, was done by Howard Drossin, but it wasn't just the music. He actually got a band together and actually did full live, like, performances of the music. Yeah, I mean, like, these days it's kind of normal. If a game track is released, you can A, count on people covering it, and B, count on the actual original composers maybe making an enhanced version of it later, or making an enhanced version of classic tunes. It happens a lot where music tracks were composed using limited hardware in the early eras, like the 80s and the 90s, but then the late 90s or early noughties, then suddenly people are saying, wait, we've got all this power, we don't need to make it a chip track, let's create completely revamped versions of the game's tune using high quality audio hardware. And that's what they did in stuff like Sonic Generations for all these classic tracks, creating complete new versions. But Howard Drossin was not one to actually wait for trends to come around. He completely grabbed the bull by the horns, and maybe it was kind of like a whole Sega thing, I don't know, but he got a band together called Roadkill, presumably named after the pet rat you have in the game Comic Zone, and said, you know, we're going to make this whole band together, and we're going to actually like perform, make fully variant versions of the music that's in this game. And that's what he did. We've basically got, there's a CD of about 6 tracks, each of them based on music from the game, and they're all like fully versioned, like vocals, everything tracks, and that's pretty cool. So I'm going to start you off with one of them. It's called Into the Zone. It's based kind of on the option soundtrack as well as the title track. It's a good one to start it off with. And here you'll have Howard Drossin of the band Roadkill playing Into the Zone from the Comic Zone OST soundtrack.
Calling you Mac head.
And that was Into the Zone by Roadkill from Comic Zone by Sega. And of course, main guy was Howard Drossen. Now, Howard, of course, made a lot of great tracks from that game. And that music, of course, with the actual, like, actual live band being fully recorded, was released as a Comic Zone soundtrack under the Sega Tunes brand. Now, I'm not actually sure. Apparently, some versions of the game did come with this with the CD and others didn't. I'm not quite sure of the full details. And Sega Tunes is also another curiosity, because it seems that Sega, in the early 90s, had this whole thing where they'd release a lot of game music, you know, albums based in game music, which, of course, as you can see, I'd be all in favor of. And indeed, in Japan, it's a lot bigger thing, even though even here in the West, a lot of people do it. But there were a lot of other tracks which Sega did, but apparently they've stopped doing that, which seems disappointing, because I think that Sega has got a really huge amount of great game music, and I'd really love it if they, like, you know, resurrected Sega Tunes, maybe even not necessarily made an album CD, although that's possible. I just don't know enough about the record industry to know for certain, but even just, like, made sure that all of their music was just fully available and everything, and that would just be really, really cool. Sega Tunes back then also included Virtual Sonic, which was a lot of Sonic music and remix Sonic music, and that was actually also by Howard Drossen, who apparently had a month to get to make it an album, a 2-CD album based on Sonic music. He ended up, like, creating, like, 2/3 of the music just on random inspirations from Sonic, which is pretty, pretty cool. And speaking of Drossen himself, boy, I think I underestimated him a little last time. He's essentially, he's done a lot of great music for, I played, of course, music he'd done on Sonic Spinball, which was that pinball game with Sonic the Hedgehog, and he's made music for a lot of other video games like Baldur's Gate, and also for movies like The Man with the Iron Fists, which he collaborated with ORZA, who apparently is this multi-talented rapper who not only collaborated with Howard Drossen to make the soundtrack of The Man with the Iron Fists, but ORZA also actually directed the movie himself. So, pretty cool going there. Drossen, and here's actually another bit, he also actually recorded his voice for, he was actually voice acted in this Mega Drive games. He plays the main character Sketch Turner, who of course, as well as being a comic artist, is also in a band, so I guess there's a nice little crossover there, and he also got a bunch of other people to record their voices. He couldn't actually get unionized voice actors, well, he probably could, but these were tiny samples, so he'd, like, go and ask, like, assistants and friends and cousins and stuff, hey, do you want to get your voice in this game? And they'd come around and they'd just record the one or two words and then they'd get it and everything would be fine. To be honest, I have no idea how they managed to get voice into the Sega Mega Drive. I mean, it was powerful, but I didn't actually think it was actually capable of speech synthesis. I've said on a previous show about how the hardware is, like, basically programmatically creating a lot of waveforms, so I'm not quite sure how he did it, and all the samples are very, very quick and short, and especially there's a bit first where it sounds like an Elvis guy says Sega, but yeah, there's voices, there are bunches of clips, and it kind of gives the atmosphere and a bit of fun stuff to it, so there's that. And of course, so Howard Drossen made the music for this game. He also recorded some of the voice for that game. He managed to get other people's voice in this game, and to top it off, he got together with a band and actually made, like, full-blood music of the game soundtrack. So, I'm going to hit you with another one of the tracks from that. This one is called Last to Follow. It's based on the background music from one of the later levels in the game, or should I say pages or episodes in the game, because that's what they're called. Each episode is 2 pages and it's how the whole thing goes. And just another reminder, this is of the fun game that is Comic Zone, a game where an artist goes through his own comic. It's difficult, it's challenging, you have to beat up a lot of enemies and then also be able to solve a bunch of little puzzles that could seriously injure you if you don't solve them in the right way. But otherwise, it's got a good thing to it, and I really like it. So, this is Last Follow by Roadkill, based on Howard Drossen's soundtrack for Comic Zone by Sega Technical Institute. Have a listen. Yeah. That was a good track, as I said. Comic Zone and Howard Drossen. Okay, Comic Zone. Of course, there is. Comic Zone isn't the only bit of music out there that has had music made a huge new version of it. As I said, Howard Drossen took his tracks and then took it to the next level earlier on. But if you recall previous shows, there was another music composer who actually did the same thing, only entering about like maybe 10, 15, 20 years between the two events actually happening. I am, of course, referring to Chris Heuselbeck, who, of course, composed the original music for Turrican 2, The Final Fight. And just to only a short time ago, well, a few months, years, quite a bit of time has passed since then, I actually made an episode on this show talking a bit about how he set up a Kickstarter trying to raise 75 grand and ended up raising about 175 grand. So that is pretty awesome. Looking back, I mean, I've been focusing a little on the future, but I think looking back, we did a lot of great crazy stuff with this show. I mean, I think I tried to cover a lot of things that were important and things that were fun, and I just covered a lot of great tracks, but Chris Heuselbeck was always one that I was a favorite with. I originally played his original Turrican theme the whole way through, despite it being like 8 minutes or something, and I said, look, I have to show you this entire track. I know it's long, but it's damn well good and one of my favorite tracks from the childhood. I then later on talked about, hey, you know how I said this guy was right? Well, the internet has validated my opinion using the medium of money. So therefore, I'm right again. And then, of course, right before I took my hiatus, I kind of, in a hurried way, wedged in a couple of tracks from the actual, when he'd completely redone it from the soundtrack anthology. I played a track and said, The Desert Rocks, and said, here's the music for the first game, and for the first level of Turrican 2, just to give you a sense of like how kick-ass the tracks actually were, and that it actually completed his quest to completely redo to high quality the soundtrack of Turrican 2 and a bunch of other Turrican games, which I haven't actually played, so I haven't replayed music from those. But after that hiatus happened and I listened through, I ended up listening through to the album a bit more, and I realized there were tracks on that album that I sorely neglected and that were kick-ass in my humble and subjective opinion. So I figure, I know, now that I'm playing these classic tracks and looking a little back, but also trying to play great music in the future, I'm going to play two tracks from the second volume of the Turrican soundtrack anthology, both from Turrican 2, The Final Fight, that I thought, listen, these really deserve a bit more attention and really deserve to be listened to. So, I'm going to start it off with Traps and then talk a bit more about the game, the album afterwards. Have a listen. We'll be right back. Well, that was energetic. That was Traps. It was from the Turrican soundtrack anthology by Chris Hoozlebeck, and originally from Turrican 2, The Final Fight, also by Chris Hoozlebeck. And as I said, it's pretty energetic. So I was playing a bit more of Turrican 2 recently in preparation for the show. It turns out it's also available on DOS. I mean, everyone remembers it mainly from Amiga, and most versions are kind of botched. But it was also released on the MS-DOS, and if you play it there, it's also got higher quality graphics as well, and the music is thankfully intact. They made one or two changes, like to the player main protagonist, that I'm not the keenest on, but it's still very good, and it keeps the music intact, which is really, really important. But as I was playing it, I just thought a bit back to my childhood and how I enjoyed the game, and tried to actually ask the question, what was it about the game that was so compelling? In fact, what is it about any video game that's so compelling, I guess? I mean, sometimes you tend to break it down, analyze it in terms of gameplay, difficulty curves, methods, techniques, soundtrack, everything else. But, you know, when I played Turrican 2, it wasn't... Was it one of those things, or was it all of those things, or was it a mixture? Or what is it? What is so compelling about a game? On an abstract level, you know, a game is just a challenge. You do the challenge, and either you succeed or fail. If you fail, you might try again. If you succeed, you might try again. Or else, in both cases, you mightn't try again. So what's compelling about it? Is it just a challenge? Or is it that the answer is that it depends on the game? It could be any of number of major things that about it. And I don't know, actually. I mean, I think every game kind of is different. What works and what is amazing in one video game doesn't work in quite as well in another game. And that's, for instance, why I think game ratings are kind of silly. A lot of things, like out of 10 or out of 100, how good a game is. But you could have two games that are given the exact same score that are totally different experiences, good for totally different reasons, and you could love one and hate the other. I mean, no, I think what was so brilliant about video games is they're like a lot of art, like the way a music could be just seen as a bunch of sound vibrations, like the way movies could just be seen as a bunch of sound vibrations and visual patterns. With video games, I think what's great is it about humans. It's once again about the human beings behind it, the people who have something to express or something to say, or even just not that, who just want to have fun or give their own viewpoints, and maybe they mightn't always say the right thing. It's in a lot of ways, when I'm thinking of all these artistic expressions, I take it back to like meeting the guy in a bar. You like meeting the guy or girl who made it, and you're just talking, and you might say something, they say something. There's a back and forth, there's a dialogue, and you're learning a bit about who they're from, and they're learning a bit about who you're from. And of course, with video games, it's mainly one direction. Of course, in the modern age, people can send emails to the game developers, but often, you know, the developer, you know, the player, the gamer, is learning a lot about the developer, or what they're thinking, or what they express, or what they feel, and a lot of thoughts and ideas are hidden in the game, and it's, in a way, the game is getting a bit of a contact with another person. But sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's more abstract, it's more of a simulation. Sometimes it even uses mental tricks to boost addiction, such as by giving a semi-random chance of something succeeding, so therefore the person keeps trying again and again. And that's not exactly healthy, but definitely with something like Turrican 2, where it's about skill-based, something like Comic Zone, which is freaking hard, I mean, I have to say. I mean, I finally managed to actually beat it, but I kind of used a save state, which is kind of like a save point which you're not meant to use, which is kind of cheating. But I mean, I know that I'm theoretically capable of beating the game in one playthrough, even if I haven't technically, but that's hard. Or if I look at Sonic and Sonic Adventure, it wouldn't work as well if you were just doing a cube along just this avenue. I mean, I guess it would be Thomas's Alone, the 3D version. And by the way, Mike Bithell, if you ever do that idea, I do want patents and royalties for the idea. But the point is, it's how the people express themselves, whether they're using strict game mechanics, whether they're using characters or storyline on top of them. And I think some of the best games are able to work the human elements along with the game mechanics. So it's not just a simulation, it's not just a challenge, it's this whole package, this whole thing of feeling what the other person is about, or at least that's what I think. And I mean, I believe that that's important, and I believe that, you know, that's what we should be doing, expressing ourselves and telling everybody what we're about, unless of course they're getting want us to shut up and stop listening, which I'm worried constantly that is what the listeners want me to do. But in any event, I think I'll leave it there. Yes, I kind of awkwardly ended that, but the whole point is, I think it's about personal expression. I think it's about just learning about it. There are a lot of great people in this world. There are a lot of great people in this world who create really great things that communicate with other people, and that people really, really love. And I think that's great, and I want to continue. I want all people out there just to express themselves, to say what they really feel, and follow the things they love, and just tell others about it, and let people know who you really are. Because I think that that's one of the most beautiful things in this world, the human beings and everyone around us, and everyone doing their own, having their own part to play, or not even just a part, doing their own thing and saying what they feel, and other people listening and having a listen. And with that, I hope you've enjoyed listening to my show. I hope you've enjoyed me having my own bit of self-expression about the world of video games and maybe a bit of life. And I'll leave you with The Great Bath by Chris Husebeck. It was also it's kind of a bit more somber and melodic one. It's from an underwater stage. And I think it's a great track to end us off with. This has been David Collins with BitNote. Thank you for listening.